1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3.
You are listening to
In the Public Interest.
In the Public Interest. On KTSW.
San Marcos.
San Marcos.
What's going on, KTSW listeners? You're listening to In the Public Interest. I'm one of your hosts, Marcus Mingo.
And I'm one of your other hosts, Carmen De La Garza.
Hello, Carmen. Today is our 7th show, and today we'll be talking about research on campus.
Very interesting topic to cover, I'd say, being that research is done all over the world, and everyone does it on a daily basis, and you don't even know it.
Yes. Now, according to dictionary.com, the definition of research is the careful study of a given object, field, or problem, undertaking to discover facts or principles. So basically an act or period of such study.
So, for example, it can be anywhere to doing your research on people through social media like Facebook, Twitter, even Google, to doing more difficult research and more precise work. Like in school or college or for businesses.
Yeah, so basically, like, if you meet somebody and, you know, they say, follow me on Instagram, send me a friend request on Facebook, you're not just going to automatically, you know, follow them right then and there. You're going to check out their profile a little bit. You're going to, you know, see what they're about, see what they've been doing, and that's research. That's what you're doing. Even when you're, like, trying to apply for a school, like, of course, you're going to be doing research on the school. So, like, it's not just, you know, science. It can be academics. It can be just your personal life, too. So,
It's only natural.
Yeah, it is only natural. Now, speaking of research in school, there's something called the Undergraduate Research Day that happens in the capital of Austin, and Texas State actually got to participate in it. And it's where, like, students from all over Texas go to show off their personal experiences and research that they have studied.
And wasn't it really recent this month?
Yeah, it was actually just happened in March, on March 4th. And in fact, two Texas State students really did go, and they had some interesting things to say. So here's Brittany Green with more of her story on Undergraduate Research Day.
Two Texas State University students recently attended Undergraduate Research Day at the Capitol in Austin. The purpose of the event was to showcase experiences of undergraduate students engaged in research for Texas legislators and the public through high-quality poster displays. The program highlighted how the research conducted by undergraduate students positively impacts Texas. Junior in biochemistry major Jose Reyes and senior in anthropology major Simone Lange represented Texas State at the Undergraduate Research Day. Lange's research, titled Sex Estimation in Forensic Anthropology Using Postcranial Elements of the Radius Femur and Scapula, compared the accuracy that the radius femur and scapula can identify the sex of an individual to results from previous research to ultimately help improve the identification of unknown skeletal remains. Lange says that one of the primary jobs of a forensic anthropologist is to perform a biological profile of an unknown, usually skeletonized individual. A biological profile is essentially estimating the sex, ancestry, age, and stature of a missing person. Once that information is found, the anthropologist can begin to eliminate people on a missing persons list and start to narrow down who the individual is. Then, the anthropologist can apply medical records, dental records, and any other distinguishing features to help identify the person. Lange says that identifying the sex of the person is very important.
One of the first things a forensic anthropologist will estimate is whether the person is male or female. This is really important to get right because it can eliminate all males or all females in that missing persons list, and if you get it wrong, you're never going to identify that person.
Lon says that the pelvis is a strong identifier of the person's sex.
So the bone that is by far the most accurate to estimate the sex of a person is the pelvis because of the morphological differences in males and females. Males will have a much narrower pelvis, while females will have a wide one for childbirthing. However, when you find a skeleton that needs to be identified, the pelvis is often missing or too fragmented to be able to use.
Lange based her research off of a study that was done in 2011 by Dr. Kate Spradley and Dr. Richard Jantz. In their study, they reported that the skull really isn't a reliable indicator for sex, but some postcranial bones, meaning bones below the skull, can be used to accurately estimate sex, especially the radius, femur, and scapula bones. However, their sample was based out of the southeastern United States, and Lange wanted to see if the skeletal collection here at Texas State would provide similar results. Lange's sample consisted of 56 individuals from the Texas State University donated skeletal collection located in the Grady Early Forensic Anthropology Research Laboratory. They were of a wide age at death range and all born in the 20th century. 14 measurements were taken, 2 for the scapula, 3 for the radius, and 9 for the femur for each of the 56 individuals. Measured skeletons were taken at random as to not skew the data. Lange says that her findings were similar to the previous studies, which brought her to her conclusion.
So because the Texas State Skeletal Collection is comprised of people throughout the United States, and not just within the southeastern United States, we can conclude that the formula put forth by the Spradley and Jantz study can be used to sex individuals across the U.S.
Lange says that her research began as a project for a class, but she decided to continue working on it so she could expand. She also says that it was great going to undergraduate research day. She had never been to the Capitol before. Jose Reyes titled his research, "Is the total conjugated or free portion of 11-ketotestosterone associated with the mating behavior of self and mollies?" which attempted to find a connection between hormones and mating behaviors in two closely related species of fish local to Texas that mate between species. Reyes said that the Amazon molly species needs the self and mollies to reproduce.
One of these species is called sailfin mollies, which is a bisexual species, which all that means is that it has males and females in the species. And then there's another species which it can interact with called Amazon mollies. And this species is interesting due to the fact that it's an all-female species, but they still have to mate with a male sailfin molly to actually begin the reproduction process.
The focus of the research was to gain an understanding of the mating interactions between the two species. Reyes says that he went about conducting the research by measuring and comparing how much 11-ketotestosterone the males produced.
How we planned to do that was by measuring a fish hormone called 11-ketotestosterone, and we wanted to see how much was being produced by males of the sailfin species when they mated with females of each species, and then compare the difference between the two to see how the hormone was being used based off of the female it was interacting with.
Reyes split the hormones into two different portions: the free portion, which circulates inside the bloodstream of the fish and is used for increasing mating displays and sperm count, and the conjugated portion, which is released through feces and urine to attract a female. He found that males were releasing higher concentrations of the conjugated portion when they interacted with female sailfin mollies, but not with Amazon mollies. This led him to the conclusion.
Only one portion of the hormone was being used differently between the two interactions, and that portion was the portion that's typically used to attract a female. So we saw that the hormone was at least important in attracting females of their own species, but it wasn't necessary for interactions with females of the Amazon molly species.
Reyes says that the study indicated that there could be other hormones important to the interactions, and he plans on expanding by doing another research study soon. Reyes also says that he had a great experience at undergraduate research day.
Yeah, I've never been to the Capitol before, actually, and I've also haven't been to like an event that's focused on promoting Texas research. Usually I only go to things that are more on a national level. So this was interesting, just seeing like what graduate opportunities we had around Texas, which really opened my eyes to, you know, staying in the state and continuing here.
Not only did Undergraduate Research Day give Lange and Reyes the opportunity to showcase their work, they also got to talk to congressmen and students doing research across the state. Only about 60 research projects representing more than 50 public and private universities and colleges were displayed in poster format at the event. Lange and Reyes put a lot of time and effort into their research, and being offered an opportunity to present their work at the Capitol is testimony to that.
Thank you, Brittany, for that awesome story. It's really neat that students get the opportunity to attend these kinds of events, which I'm sure opens many doors, you know, for their future, just in general. According to TexasState.edu, only up to 60 research projects will be displayed in poster format at the event, representing over 50 general academic institutions across Texas, which is both public and private schools or universities. Being that we had two students be a part of that 60, I think is really astonishing. I think it's really just a good thing.
Yeah, like, I think it's really cool that Texas State, like, win and they get to participate because, like, they get to do research for the Texas legislature. Like, how cool is that? And, like, the two projects that went, like, oh, my goodness. The first one where forensic anthropologists are using body parts like the pelvis to identify the sex of an individual. Like, I would have never thought that. People always think, you know, look somewhere else. But never people really never think to look at the limbs and stuff.
Yeah, that's crazy. The limbs, I was like, that's different.
Yeah, and, like, the story on the fish, oh, my goodness. So cool. Like, studying the hormones in two related fish species and noticing how the male fish hormones were important in attracting females of the same species, but not when interacting with fish of different species.
And not many people pay attention to those things, but you'd be surprised. Like, when you hear or read a story on that, you're like, hey, this stuff really goes down.
Yes, like, it's really cool. And I'm sure there were, like, a whole bunch of projects there that, like, involved, like, criminology, anthropology. But we actually have something on criminology because according to the dictionary.com, the definition of criminology is the scientific study of crime, criminals, criminal behavior, and corrections. On jblearning.com, it says it is critical that you collect and analyze social science data to actually understand the nature and crime and theories of crime causation. I really enjoy criminology. Like, my show is Criminal Minds.
Hey.
Like, I never miss it. Like, I watch that religiously. And I love me a good forensic science movie. Like, it just keeps me on the edge of my seat. And it's just like things you would never expect. It's just so cool. It takes you out of this world.
You're just like, what's going to happen next? What are you doing? Why is he doing that? You know, things like that. It's all in order. All in order. Now, I don't want to spoil too much, but there's a story reporting on criminal research by Sarah Duran, and she goes more into detail. So let's listen to it. Here it is.
1. An undeniable confession. 2. A crucial piece of physical evidence. 3. A witness to the crime. There are only 3 ways to solve a crime in hopes of freeing the innocent. 1. A missing piece of forensic evidence. 2. A misidentified eyewitness. 3. A faulty confession. There are only 3 of the many ways that a crime investigation could go wrong. Sometimes during the investigation of a case, the best and most ethical detectives can fall prey to several misleading traps. The misunderstanding of facts, evidence, or testimony can leave innocent victims behind bars, while guilty people run free. Helping to free detectives of those risks is Texas State's very own chair in criminology, Dr. Kim Rosmo. A former Vancouver detective, Rosmo was one of the first research professors at the university when he joined in 2003. Entering Headstrong, he created the Center for Geospatial Intelligence and Investigation to begin engaging students in the Department of Criminal Justice. Rosmo says the center has had the opportunity to study several impacting topics over the last few years.
Here we studied illegal crossings in the Del Rio sector of the Texas-Mexico border, trying to figure out where people most likely were most likely going to illegally cross the border, and then identifying human and physical geographic features associated with illegal crossings. Here we looked at the geospatial structure of terrorist cells, you know, how far the different parts of a terrorist cell, like safe houses, weapons storage, pay phones that they use were situated from each other to get some idea of what they looked like in physical space.
Other studies that the GII has conducted consist of profilings in IED incidents in Baghdad, detecting movement patterns of criminals even before they commit a crime, and applying geographical profiling models to animal foraging. One of Dr. Rosmo's current projects detects the factors of criminal investigative failure.
What are the things that sort of led up and influenced the ultimate failure. So all the contributing causes, very much like what is done with an airplane crash. You know, rarely is there one cause for an accident. There's usually a number of things. Mm-hmm. So that's the approach we're taking for these.
Completion of a grant fills up a two-year period in which there can be multiple stages of research to provide a theory. First, they survey. The surveys consist of hundreds of cases that could prevent an investigative failure. Second, they choose. They choose which cases to evaluate and begin collecting data. Third, they analyze. They operate a full-scale analysis of the cases to identify what went wrong. There are three types of cases that I identify in a case analysis. For starters, personnel issues.
So, for example, detectives lacking the necessary knowledge, or personnel aren't trained properly, or lack of a logical analysis, or failure to use experts. The other is organizational problems, like insufficient resources, policies, groupthink symptoms, and the final situational features, which are problems inherent to the crime itself.
Then there are the main factors of faulty investigative thought to identify.
We group them into a few different categories. One is what we call cognitive biases. We can think of these as sort of mental optical illusions. People making mistakes in their judgment or decision-making because of certain influences. So second grouping is errors in understanding probability. If you think about a criminal investigation or the whole criminal justice process, it's about, in many cases, probability. Very few things are known for certain. So who are the most likely suspects? When the police make an arrest, they need reasonable probable grounds. Juries find defendants guilty on the basis of being certain beyond a reasonable doubt. These are all probability statements. If we have an expert up there talking about a match, well, all those have errors associated with them, which again gets into the realm of probability. And if we don't understand probability, then, and most humans are pretty bad at it, it's easy to make a number of mistakes. And the third grouping are organizational factors that create pressures and influences on detectives.
After a full completion of the case analysis, the information gathered will enable researchers to understand each case and potentially why and where a failure may have happened. Since the start of the center in 2004, the GII has completed 4 major studies and hoping to make criminal investigative failures its next winning project. Dr. Rossmo says that it's not about the completion of the project that matters, it's the contribution.
I believe it's important that research not exist in a vacuum, that we always try to make the real world better, and that we focus on, you know, our contributions to knowledge, to crime prevention, to solving crimes, to getting justice, to effective and humane rehabilitation. In other words, this is all about trying to make the world safer.
The justice system may never be perfect, but with the help of Dr. Rossmo, we are a step closer to getting there.
Thanks, Sarah, for that awesome story on criminology. I think it was really interesting because criminology isn't perfect. You know, it's always changing. Like, I know the Texas State Research Journal, they publish stories that involve criminology and all the different types of that. And, like, the Research Journal basically is just an organization here that comes together and, like, publishes different research papers from people all over the world. Like, they just recently got a research paper from Korea, so they had to translate that so they can publish it, and it comes out every semester. So I think it's just cool that, you know, Texas State has something like that, because it just shows that research is always continuing, and it really does change every day.
And it's good that they can compare, especially with people from all over the world. They have different cultures, different views. I think it's pretty awesome also.
Yes, there's always something new to find.
And thankfully, we have books and technology we have nowadays. It's absolutely incredible. It's diverse. It's evolved. There's local libraries, school libraries, labs, so much we can take to our advantage for research.
Yes, and I love libraries. So I'm actually excited that luckily we have a story on how libraries impact our research and research habits. So here's Chelsea Seifert with research assistance through Alkek Library.
Alkek Library at Texas State University has always been a place for research. It hasn't been until recently that there have been various efforts to really make Texas State a notable research university. As Texas State University makes this progress, Alkek Library is prepared to help. Services at the University Library have always been vast. Students and faculty alike interested in conducting research have many outlets and means of assistance available through the library and librarians alone. Currently, these services include the Research and Information Desk, Ask a Librarian Service, individual research consultations, instruction research sessions customized to your area of study, tutorials, and much more. Research Instruction and Outreach Librarian Tara Smith says coming directly to the students and faculty is a lesser-known method to offer assistance.
Roving research assistants, that's another kind of where we can come to you kind of research assistants. If a faculty or student wanted us to come to their department and help them with research, we can do that as well.
Alkek Library has no shortage on documents available for research either. The collection includes over 1.5 million printed volumes covering all subject areas and disciplines, roughly 100,000 electronic journals, over 500,000 ebooks, over 430 research databases, and over 500,000 microform audio and visual material. With such a substantial amount of material already encompassing the library, Alkek is currently seeking efforts to make Texas State University a more prominent research institution. Smith says something that makes Texas State special in regards to research is the collection of government documents.
We are a federal depository, so we have a collection of U.S. and Texas government documents, and we get about 60% of federal publications. Not all libraries have that designation.
As the university moves toward a research status, Smith says research librarians and assistants are focusing more on faculty study and overall supporting their research. One way that is currently being done is by dividing the librarians up regarding subject matter. Because the librarians are divided up by subject matter, Smith says this allows each librarian to have a more personal relationship with their faculty and to better help assist in gathering data. Other ways Texas State and Alkek Library are pushing to make the transition to research status is by keeping all information and data collections up to date. This includes conducting surveys to understand what areas professors and faculty are interested in and how they use the library, and by scanning all course and department web pages. Smith says this process is called environmental scans. In an effort to make information more public, Alkek is currently switching to digital ebooks and documents. Smith says this is overall beneficial for most disciplines, but others serve their purpose better in print.
We are moving toward digital, but certain areas are sensitive to print, art being one of them. Scholars, faculty still lean towards print because looking at artworks on screen as opposed to looking at them in print books, sometimes it's less distracting. It just depends on the discipline.
There are multiple areas throughout the library where students and professors can work together, including the collaboration stations and group study rooms. The collaboration stations provide a space where individuals can meet and use multiple computer screens to work together and maintain privacy in a quiet area. Smith says areas like these are extremely beneficial for people and groups to understand as a unit the progress of their research. Recently, materials in Alkek were used for an art history professor from Texas State who participated in a panel discussion about a U.S. invasion in Central America exhibit. Smith says as the librarian liaison for the School of Art and Design, it was her job to assist the professor in finding necessary and relevant material for the exhibit. Smith says the research librarian staff are always eager to help students and faculty with any research they are working on.
We are here to help people with their research. We welcome any types of questions via all those different channels that I mentioned earlier, chat, email, in person. That's what we are here to do and help people with.
More detailed information about the services provided by Alkek Library at Texas State University can be found at the library website.
And thanks, Chelsea, for that awesome story. I go to the library all the time. Their research department is amazing. Like, when I did a research paper over witchcraft, first place I went to was the library because I knew they had, like, all the things I needed. And they did. Like, there was someone there to help me boom, and then I got all the stuff I needed. And it ended up getting me an A on the paper. So the department is amazing, and I'm actually really glad that they're growing and getting better.
Credible and reliable sources, people. That's what's important. Mm-hmm. I'm currently doing a research project in my PR class. It's on Hispanic crossover brands for food. So, you know, the food that comes in from other countries to the U.S., I think it's pretty interesting. I was like, hey, I didn't know we had that much food come in from everywhere else. And you'd be pretty surprised with the results and when you do the research.
Yeah, and like you always are doing research. Like Carmen said, you do this on a daily basis without you even knowing. Because when we were preparing for this show, we didn't even realize we were doing research ourselves.
We were doing some really critical research.
So,
really critical.
Yeah, like that's what makes the show so good. Like we literally sat down and we looked up some stuff and, you know, found some stuff that actually made the show, you know, A+. So think about it. If there wasn't for research, you would not be listening to this A+ show.
Exactly. There you go, Marcus.
See, you always doing research.
So, Marcus and I want to thank you for listening to our show, In the Public Interest. Next week, our IPI hosts, Judith Prieto and Malcolm Gibbs, will be covering our 8th show on good things people are doing for San Marcos. Hey, that's nice. KTSW listeners, please research your social media.
Yes, so that means add us on Facebook, like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, follow us on Twitter, tweet us at KTSW News. If you have to do some research on us, go ahead, check us out. We understand. And again, I'm Marcus Mingo.
And I'm Carmen De La Garza.
And we were your wonderful hosts for this research show. And just remember, you're listening to KTSW 89.9, the other side of radio.